Moncrief on News Talk.
Barbara and Deccan are here to dispense some wisdom to us both.
Yes, let's do it. Let's save the world.
Save the world. Well, let's just save a small patch of it before the inevitable
happens.
Yes. My husband and I are trying to buy a house. We're not long married, but we've been together for 5 years. So I thought we knew each other well. However, we've always rented and pretty much coasted through life, enjoying nights out, trips away, dinners in restaurants a few times a month. Last year, we agreed we needed to start saving for a house, so we stopped doing those things. However, he's still going for pints with his friends, buying lunch and work every day, buying unnecessary gifts for his nieces and nephews just because. He's barely reaching his half of the savings each month. Sometimes he's short. And I feel like he's not committed fully to the sacrifices that we have to make in order to buy a home. It's me doing the big shop every week, and he's complaining when I look for his half, asking me how much it cost. When I raise the issue of his spending, he says I'm nagging him. Am I being unreasonable that he should be putting more effort in?
I think this is potentially now quite serious.
Oh,
I
really?
Yeah, I do. I think it's very important that this writer, who I'm assuming is a woman, sort out this, like, with a fair degree of urgency, because I can see this being a bigger problem than just having difficulty in saving for the which is a big problem in itself, saving a deposit and getting mortgage approval. Okay, so from what she tells us, he's not doing his fair share of saving. And I think that along with not being able to, if that, along with his attitude preventing them from being able to get a deposit and a mortgage approval, that kind of cavalier attitude to money and that kind of attitude of my money's kind of my money and I can do what I like with it and our money is something different. Like, and I've argued with this with various people before. I think one of the things, if you're going to set up with somebody else for the long term, whether you're married or not married, but if you're buying a house and possibly having kids, you have got to be open and transparent and you've got to be completely on the same page when it comes to money. And in my book, that also means it's not my money, your money, it's our money, right? Yeah. If you're setting up shop together, it is our money and you're both invested equally and you both have to put the same amount of effort in. So I would urge this woman to sit down and have, we have them still regularly, what's called a financial summit with your partner. And I think the two things you need to work out is, number one, transparency. There should be nobody hiding money or squirreling away money or having money that isn't kind of part
running
of
away
the
money.
Deal.
I was about to say running away money.
I have a big problem. And I mean, you know, I am absolutely dyed the wool feminist. I have a big problem with that concept of running away money, because I think that if you can't trust, and I know you don't know what's coming down the track.
Yeah, of course.
But I think you need transparency and I think you need agreed targets, you know, for saving in this case, or, you know, we need to put so much in to cover bills. We need to put so much in to cover day to day and we need to put so much into kind of rainy day savings, whatever else you like. So I think that this is not just important in this instance because of buying a house. I think this is important to their marriage because this could become potentially a big, big problem.
The verdict is grim already. Lucky you haven't bought the house yet. Get out while you can. Someone else just says divorce them.
Wow.
Declan, can you save this marriage?
Yeah. Well, look,
because divorce is very expensive. She thinks she's, I think it's costing her now.
She's
I think a mortgage is expensive.
She's already involved,
I hear what you're saying. I do understand what you're saying. And I do see the merits of this kind of fully integrated unit where our money is all of our money, regardless of where it's sourced.
I can sense a but coming.
There's a little bit of a but. And the but is that not every relationship actually needs to work like that. And successful relationships can work in another way, that you can operate perfectly, satisfactorily and successfully and committedly in a relationship where you have a process where you go, we're going to contribute, whatever you want to say, equally or even in the socialistic way, from each according to their ability and to each according to their need. But the bottom line is that the real problem here for this woman, I think, if she is a woman indeed, is not just about the money. It's the sense of buy-in from the future husband.
He is a husband.
About life choices. And I don't want to say he seems like he's a little bit immature, but maybe that's what's going on. Mm. But also, I think with life and life experiences, maturity and experience are kind of co-travelers that you kind of, you learn as you go along. And This seems to be that she's a little bit ahead of him in terms of having the you know, her shoulder, her head and her shoulders properly. She's a bit more mature about planning for the future. And he has been a kind of easy traveller up to that point and not necessarily making the full sacrifice that she feels is necessary in order for them to get the plan, which apparently they discussed last year and agreed to. Now, the discussed to and agreed to last year bit is a bit that I'm really getting to is that if you make a decision that you're going to do something and that decision is completely understood, and if the plan to achieve that decision has been laid out and he's failing, then you're dealing with a big issue that somebody is not doing what you agreed as a couple.
Yeah.
However, if it's a kind of this arbitrary thing where no, this plan that we're coming together for should cost you the maximum amount of pain and should impact you in ways, you know, that's just, nah, I'm not down for that. Because you can, some people can, you know, manage to do full contribute to the plan according to the...
But he obviously isn't.
Yeah.
I know, but is he? That's
he's
the whole point.
This is what I'm saying.
If they've agreed, they're putting in a certain amount of money every month.
Yeah.
That's half each.
Yeah.
She says he's barely reaching, but he's reaching.
That's where I'm getting to. He's a little bit short.
He's complaining when I look for his half of the big shop. It doesn't say he doesn't give it to her. I think her issue could be he just seems to be enjoying this a bit too much. The subtext could be he's making more money than she is, so it's not hurting him as much as it's hurting her.
Kind of what I was seeing.
Perhaps
it's
the conversation they need to have.
Yeah. Well, you see,
But you're saying the same thing. Sorry to interrupt you. But you're kind of saying the same thing. Because what you're saying...
But I kind of am not. Because what you said... What you said was, you know, they both have to contribute. And I think you said something like fairly and according to their means. Because obviously in most couples, you're not earning exactly the same as each other.
Yeah.
Perhaps one's earning more and the other one's earning less. But my point, I suppose, again, coming specifically from a woman's perspective, is that if you do that kind of, we all contribute to according to our means and, you know, kind of half as much as near half as we can make it, women have to stand back very often because we have babies, because we take maternity leave, which may not be paid for long periods. I know that's all improved since my day, but there are times when you need to pass the baton over to your partner and they do all the earning and you do. That doesn't, like, when I retired from the world of paid work when my kids were small, I mean, one of the first things we sat down and discussed was exactly this. And one thing I was very clear about, I know how this is going to sound now, yeah, but anyway, was that, like, he was earning the money, but I was doing a whole load of unpaid work.
Mm.
So the money he earned wasn't his money.
Yeah.
It was our money.
Yeah.
Because he couldn't earn all that money, except I was doing all this other stuff, which doesn't get paid, which was saving us on childminding, on having a cleaner, on, like, a whole load of other stuff because I was doing the work. And that's why I think you need, you know, in an ideal world, yeah, everything is lovely and everybody contributes kind of half or as near half as possible. But life isn't like that. And the other thing I think that's really important here from the longevity point of view, like, we've been married 28 years. When we started out, you know, you think, oh, you're struggling to buy a house, and oh, you buy the house and then you think, how will I ever make the mortgage? And then you manage to, and you manage to do all the stuff. But there have been two significant big storms just in those 28 years that wiped out savings, that wiped out income, that pushed us right back to zero, where we had to pick ourselves up on the floor. One was the recession in 2008 and the other was COVID, where in both cases, my husband's work fell off a cliff completely. So if you don't have this kind of transparency and we're both in this together and it's not my money, your money, it's our money, I think it makes all of those things much more difficult. This is the end of my TED talk. Thank you very much.
Yes, indeed. No, but the part, what I was driving at there was that I think the 50-50 agreement they've come to is possibly screwing her because he makes more money.
Yes.
It shouldn't be 50-50.
Yeah.
If they should come out with some sort of proportionate deal, as Declan was saying.
That's kind of where I was coming with it as well. I'm saying exactly the same thing.
But if you pool all the money, then that isn't an issue.
Yes. So the reality then is
I mean, different couples, but is it okay to have, like, a central pool of money to pay all the important stuff and then each has their own little, they can buy whatever they want with it?
No. Put all, you all get into the one bank account and you have different bank accounts, but they're in both names. It'll also be handier when you die or the other person dies.
You mean so all...
Who are you talking to, Barbara?
But, like, if it's a joint bank account, then you can really quickly... What did you spend 50 quid
on? Exactly, yeah. But that's right, it should be all joint bank accounts.
Oh, no, I wouldn't be done with that
at all.
No.
Oh, yeah, now we're getting it.
No, because I think, yeah, you know, it's... in an ideal world where everything is ideal, I kind of see your point.
Well, by definition, that's what an ideal world is.
It's an ideal world. Everything is ideal.
Good point. Ideally, yes, that's true. But in a practical world where, you know, people end up in a situation, whether it's they have long kind of courting and they have an engagement and then they get married.
Did you say courting?
I know, I'm talking about an ideal world, not the world I live in. But the reality is that people's relationships kind of change, and sometimes the change is a push more than a kind of a collective hand grabbing, let's run this direction towards the setting sun. Sometimes you're being pushed into a direction of maturing or integrating your relationship. When you're not that you're not ready, but that you're not there, you're not kind of planning it in your head. So sometimes
the other thing I'll say here is sorry.
Is it change? Yeah, no, you're just changing the subject. Go ahead, Robert.
Okay. No, the other thing I'll say here, which jumped out, is this: just it's me doing the big shop every week. Why is she doing the big shop every week?
That's a good point.
Why is he not helping to do the big shop, or she's only doing it every second week?
His job is to criticize the bargains you got down in Aldi. That's his job.
More as you. Guys, probably said, and is probably
he's paying
right.
Half, which is the
yeah, but he's getting his income is more than hers.
He's probably eating more as well. Yeah. He's probably eating
probably
more.
Exactly. Sitting at home on the sofa in his Man United jersey, stuffing in the burgers,
eating the whole pack of biscuits.
Oh my God, this is. I mean, I hope their relationship is going to survive this kind of. That marriage is doomed, says Ed. Forget the house, get a good lawyer. You don't have to contribute equally. That's on her. She sounds like she's being very controlling. He clearly isn't ready for that stage of life yet. She needs to be fair in him. If he gives up his social life now, he could resent her later in life.
Yeah. And I was talking about that earlier on.
He's giving up his social life.
Yeah, but the problem, it's not about giving up. It's about somebody realising that the choices that they're making are their own choices, that they're ready. They're doing, this is my plan as well as our plan.
It also comes down to the two of them sitting down and having a conversation and being really open and transparent about what they need, where they're going, what they're both going to put into it. So that if he does want to go out with the lads and have a few pints, that's okay. And she's not sitting at home seething, going, oh, there he goes again, because we've never really had a conversation about how we're managing our finances. I mean, I do take the point. I do believe I'm
right,
obviously.
Well, that was her big mistake then, wasn't it? Her big mistake was not having that conversation in the first place.
And I do think there's a reticence. It's a bit like sex. I do think people are, you know, afraid to talk in detail about money and what they earn and what money they have and where they're putting it and what they're doing.
That's what I was banging on about when I'm talking about this long journey of integration. When you first meet somebody, if the first thing out of your mouth is how much do you earn, people run away from those people.
No, but I think
by the time you're married, but by the time you're married,
it's like, do you want kids? Like, you have it before you get married.
I would have thought so. Someone says, I'm a mortgage broker. Once you're saving enough a month, you don't need to cut off your social life. In fact, banks don't like if you've no discretionary spend. It can be a red flag.
Yeah, because
so there they go.
Yeah,
give us a mortgage. He's in the pub the whole time. Oh, that's grand.
He's a great catch for somebody else.
Can I just say one more thing? It's a man's world. That's all I'm saying.
As James Brown said. Yes. Yeah. Brian in Cork says, I think she sounds like my first wife. Before you're married, it's fine to have the 50-50 contributions to bills. But surely once you're married, you're all in with money. I think that's where the law stands. But you certainly should be all in once you have kids. But they don't. Yeah, my impression is certainly from the email didn't seem like they are. Noel says, folks, I hope this woman is aware that even if her partner doesn't put a shilling into the mortgage, if his name is on the deeds, he's entitled to half the house should the time arrive. Let him do the big shop every second week or just have a shopping budget and a message list. He should divorce her. Ed said she sounds like a ball breaker.
There we go.
Barbara, you should not pool money. That's so old school. You're so old school, you're Barbara.
Well, I never pretended to be down with the kids.
What I earn is my money. I transfer money to the joint account, each money for bills, etc. My money is my money. Someone else says, no, Barbara, I work for my money. It's not my husband's.
Okay.
Yeah. My husband and I have our own personal current and saving accounts and also a joint account that we use for joint household expenses, which we share equally. Works very well. It's important for everyone to have their own assets, even when they're married.
But what about a partner? And it doesn't need to be a woman. It could equally be a man who makes that the couple make the decision. One of them is going to stay at home and look after the children for a number of years.
No, well, that's fair enough. Yeah, that's a completely different.
Work, then.
Yeah.
So, yeah. You know, it's
but,
not.
But what you actually answered that question yourself, because you said, but what about the situation? Which means you already know that that's not a universal situation.
No, it's
which
not.
Means in
the,
so that's
but I
all.
I think if you pool the thing, then you don't have the problem.
But everybody doesn't have to pool the thing just because it works in that one situation.
Yeah, but I mean, then you don't have the problem. I mean, either you trust your partner or you don't. I don't understand why you wouldn't pool, why you have to have your own money. Like, but, it kind of seems to me like, oh, this mightn't work out, so I need to have my own money or whatever. I mean, the only argument I would say that I can understand is, well, you can never surprise each other with a present because, you know, yeah. You kind of know. But other than that,
my parents came over. God, we better change the subject quickly.
God, that was very
like all our families, yes.
I'm exhausted. Surprise Barbara with a present, will you, for God's sake, share
it. I assume this is from a French person. My parents came over from France for Christmas this year for the first Irish Christmas. I'd warn them that things are different here. Lots of neighbours dropping in, few nights in the pub, long lazy days by the fire, etc. However, they hated every second of it. They felt it was rude to spend the day in pyjamas or tracksuits. God. Snobs. And they didn't like how much it was centred around drink. It's not something that bothered me, but my parents have been very cool with my wife ever since, and I'm stuck in the middle. They think she should apologise. She thinks they should decline an invite next time. Not that I think that's going to happen anytime soon. Were we wrong not to entertain them a little more and give them a Christmas they'd enjoy? I never thought the animosity would drag on this long, but we're due to go to them in June for a holiday, and my wife is saying she won't go.
This is like
Reiki.
This is so French. It's so French.
Yeah, bringing the horse over to France.
I was just about to say that too.
I hate that.
A bit of butter on the spuds.
Oh, Sean, he was right. He was practicing that outside. Oh,
I wasn't. I wasn't. Some things just come to me, Barbara. I don't need it written down. I just thought it was a little look for the room.
Yeah.
Look, there's a little bit of like stereotyping going on here, which I'm going to give a wide berth to, because I think the fundamental point here is that house guests came to the house and they were made stay in the house and they wanted to be shown a little bit of Ireland on their first trip to Ireland.
Could
and they
be
felt
very generous.
They felt that that scenario wasn't met because the people who were hosting the guests wanted to have their version of Christmas, which is this nice in front of the fireplace and stuff like that. It's not necessarily the kind of Christmas I have, but it's a version of Ireland that this guy seems to think everybody experiences. So my point here is that they're both right, they're both wrong. And the reality of it is that they're not going to get over this unless somebody just acts like the bigger person. Because it is like, I think the parents coming over and expecting to be treated nicely on their first trip to Ireland is not a bad or wrong expectation.
What?
Likewise, I don't think it's a wrong expectation of the family to be doing the kind of, we have Christmas in pyjamas and drink Baileys for breakfast.
Yeah, but when they go over to the parents, they're eating frogs' legs and all that stuff.
Yeah, that's what they
have to put up with that, don't they?
Do they though?
But a Christmas trip, I think, is different from, oh, we're coming over to see your lovely city and to see your lovely country and, you know, we're spending 2 weeks on holiday. We're coming to visit. A Christmas visit is different. And this is a family visit. These aren't like tourists who are coming and your job isn't a tour guide.
Where the son of the family knew already what the parents were like.
But they came over to experience. I mean, Christmas is different in lots of different cultures. They came over to experience Christmas in Ireland. And what they got was, to me, a quintessentially Irish Christmas. And they didn't like it. That's grand. They've learned a lesson.
Yeah.
They don't come again.
They got a few nights in the pub. What more do they want?
Like, but that's what I'm saying. I'm saying. I don't understand who should apologise.
I do think though I can see if you come over and you're expecting to be treated like a guest and you don't feel like you're
their family.
Yeah, but still, yeah.
No, I think they're daft. I don't think anybody has anything to apologise about. I think they had an Irish experience. They didn't like it. So don't come again at Christmas, because this is what happens at Christmas. If they didn't like it, that's fine. They're entitled to have their own little French Christmas, whatever that involves, getting all dressed up, getting your hair done, putting your makeup on and all that kind of stuff. That's grand. But that's not what these people did. I mean, in fairness, I'd try and get your man, who's clearly French as well, to try and get the parents to see the funny side of it. Do you know?
Maybe not, though.
And just get over it. Like, it's not a big deal.
But do you not think that the son of the French parents that came over kind of missed a trick not sussing out in advance that?
He's a guy. Wouldn't dawn on him.
Ah, but he's French.
They're very sophisticated.
No, but they're like, but people often are struck by how reliant on drink our culture tends to be, especially around Christmas time.
Yeah.
That you, you know, yeah, people are calling in, oh, you'll have a whiskey. Or,
but
you know,
that, kind that of was a surprise to them. Everybody knows that.
Yeah, everybody knows that. But probably the reality of it hit these French people quite, you know, the parents quite hard.
And they didn't die. They didn't get hurt. They didn't end up in hospital. They just didn't enjoy themselves.
They just didn't enjoy themselves.
But do you not think that if you have guests in your house and you know even why that's happening, that they're not enjoying themselves, that there's a little tiny bit of annoyance on you?
My English in-laws came over for their first Christmas in Ireland when we moved into our first house. And I mean, there was quite a lot of alcohol. And on Stephen's Day,
I made music.
I made them sit through the Michael Collins movie. They didn't get huffy. Yeah. They were so stunned at the end of it. I didn't know what to say.
That wouldn't quietly be like, you know, a board fology kind of, that this is how you discover Ireland. Yeah.
Make
kind
me
of
feel good about my history. Yeah.
Well, I'm sorry, yeah, but the balance
is on me.
What did the French family expect coming to Ireland at Christmas? Though a few other people are saying that this couple should get divorced as well. It's not a good day today for marital harmony.
I think you should just get
like, it's like the portal. Like, I don't know how anybody thought that was going to work. It's worked exactly as most Irish people would have told you it was going to work.
If you erect anything in Talbot Street, you'd see an arse behind it eventually.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
It's inevitable.
And I mean, these French people were lucky. They didn't see anybody's arse, presumably.
Some of those pajamas are very thin around the
arse. This is just a quickie. My husband is starting to sweat a lot during sex. He's put on some weight recently. So when we're in the bedroom, any motion he makes, sweat a lot. It's starting to gross me out. The other night he was on top of me and the beads of sweat started to drip onto my head. It turned me off immediately. He now thinks something else is up because I'm avoiding sex as a result. I don't know what to do. How do I tell him the sweaty sex isn't for me?
Wait till she hits menopause. She'll be able to return the compliment.
Well, I'll go on top this time.
Drip.
I mean, like, you know, I don't know, like, assuming they're doing the normal amount of physical activity during sex, sweating excessively would be a little bit worrying. He might need to go to the doctor and have a look at why he's sweating excessively. But if he's grand and he's just sweating excessively because he's put on weight and he's not very fit, you know, maybe put a face cloth on your face or something like that. Just pretend he's somebody else.
You think that's some sort of weird kink she's about?
Well,
on her face.
No, on her face to catch
maybe
the drips.
Maybe you could wear one of those, you know, the sweatbands, the John McEnroe sweatbands on your forehead. You know, that you're into like kind of tennis sex or something.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
but yeah, I mean, I agree with you.
But it's kind of sex is sweaty. Like, I think the only problem was that it fell on her face.
Yeah, but it sounds excessively sweaty. If drops are coming off, that's
not great.
He's going to be clutching his chest.
Would he have
had
a lot of alcohol, do you reckon, before sex? Would that have made him get hot and sweaty?
Well,
that'd
be the norm.
Not if you're friends.
Unlike those French people.
Unless you're French.
Not if you're friends.
Exactly. They're having a coffee.
Oh, I feel this baguette is turning. No.
Right.
Declan, I don't believe you said that.
Barbara and Declan have both started to perspire here. So we'll wrap it up there. Thanks a million, lads.
Moncrief. Weekdays at 2 p.m. on News Talk.